Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Welcome to Capital Irish. It's Andy Linton here. It's a little belated, but Happy New Year to you all. I'm recording this at home as the Wellington Access Radio studios are closed to us for the time being, as we're at the red setting. I'd like to take the chance to thank all our sponsors who make this possible for us, both on Access Radio and on our podcast channel. And normally at this point I'd say thanks to our technical staff, but as that's me, I'm just going to leave that part out. It's almost 2 years now since we had our first case of COVID-19 in New Zealand. It's only now we're really looking down the barrel of having widespread infection in the community. Back then, everything about this was really scary, but now with high vaccination rates here in the country and an apparently less dangerous variant in Omicron, I'm a bit more optimistic. I hope you've been jabbed as much as possible. I've been and had my booster, and I'm sure it's the best option of all the possible things we could do. So let's have a bit of music.
Very well, Billy. Now for a great new group from Belfast with an old standard, Baby Please Don't Go. Here is, or here they are, anyhow, they are them.
To see Kenneth Branagh's new film Belfast last week. I've been looking forward to seeing it, as there's been quite a bit of buzz around it. Now, Branagh was born in Belfast, of course, and left when he was 9. And he dedicates the film to those who stayed, those who left, and those who were lost. The film's set in 1969-70, and the central character of the film is a sort of 9-year-old buddy, who's, of course, Branagh. His Protestant working-class family were living in Mount Collier Street in the north of Belfast in the Tigers Bay district. And in 1969, when the film starts, this was a mixed area with both Catholic and Protestant families living side by side. The film starts on the 15th of August in 1969, when there was a sudden, ferocious Protestant attack on Catholics in the street. And this was supposedly to help the police, take the heat off the police who were engaged in the Battle of the Bogside up in Derry. I'm not sure how that was supposed to work, but that was supposedly the logic for it all. And it's also there was the day that the army arrived in the streets of Belfast after Bombay Street, which is a couple of miles away, had been torched. And the shock of that left its mark on Branagh for life, and like it did for many thousands of others. The narrative of the film is based around Buddy's view of the events that led to his family moving to England to get away from the Troubles. And if you're looking for a film which, you know, is an accurate historical document about what happened in Belfast at that point, I don't think this is the film. The film's very theatrical. You know, you could actually envisage this thing being shown on being on stage, and it's clearly, you know, the view from this young man, young boy, who how he sees it and what's going on. I enjoyed it a lot. It was great, you know, and I recommend you go and see it. There's quite a lot of music in it. There's quite a lot of songs from Van Morrison, but there's this song which is part of the soundtrack towards the end of the film, and we'll have a listen to that, and then we'll maybe talk a little bit more about it.
Gone astray, keeping her.
Love Affair with Everlasting Love, a song from the soundtrack of Belfast. In August 1969, I was on a merchant ship somewhere between Montreal and Chicago on the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Great Lakes up between Canada and the US. And so I was a whole lot less aware of what was going on in Belfast and in the rest of Northern Ireland until I got home in September. I can still remember an older crewmate saying as we came in sight of the Donegal coast after crossing the Atlantic, saying, "There you are, God's own country, full of the devil's own people." And in many ways, the next few years didn't prove him wrong. Of course, I was one of those who left. It took me two or three years more. I was 1974 when I went, and along with many others. And I've heard that in those first 5 years of the 70s, 10% of the population up sticks and got away. Some went back, but many didn't. And it took 30 years until the Good Friday Agreement put an end to the overt violence. So if we jump forward to the present. Late last year, there was an event in Dublin to promote the idea of a shared island. And one of the people who spoke at that event was a man called Patrick Keelty. Patrick was born in County Down in 1971, around the same time as the Belfast film was set. He gave a speech about reconciliation and how people need to learn to live with each other, and especially in the Northern Ireland context. Now, he was someone whose father was shot during the Troubles. His father was a businessman who was shot when he spoke out against activities of some of the Protestant paramilitaries. And so Patrick would be someone who had every right to be bitter about those events. And yet he gave this great speech. And I'm going to play it for you. So have a listen and see what you think.
If someone had told me at the start of this year I'd be on top of a bonfire in Beaver Park Estate in Belfast in July, I would have had a few questions for them. The main question probably being, how did I manage to get elected Pope in the first place? But weird and wonderful things happen when you decide to share. I was visiting a young loyalist, Joel Keyes, for a film I was making for the BBC. And before I knew it, I was helping him throw a busted headboard on top. On the 11th night, I was invited back to watch the bonfire I'd helped build go up. Thankfully, by then, I'd been replaced on the top by a tricolour. Watching the flag burn, which is the bonfire equivalent of booing the opposition's national anthem, made me feel a bit uncomfortable. But with a new sea border making many loyalists feel way more uncomfortable and cut off from the rest of the UK, the rejection of Irishness wasn't exactly a surprise. What was a surprise, though, was how warmly I was welcomed, the genuine appreciation for making an effort to come and talk, and the openness about what we had in common and what we didn't. The film was meant to be about the next generation in Northern Ireland, why some young people currently feel angry, and where others feel that their future lies. But after meeting Brona McConville, whose granny Jean was one of the disappeared, I ended up having to have a look at myself. Brona is one of the many people in the North who are suffering from transgenerational trauma, from events that they didn't personally experience, but that have massively impacted on their lives in a way that I never thought possible. It turns out that trauma is actually passed down through generations, like a family heirloom. It's one of the reasons why it's been hard for some people to find common ground in Northern Ireland, because behind the knee-jerk of politics is usually pain. In a post-Good Friday Agreement Ireland, a big mistake is one that I've already made, trying to put a lid on the past and hand the new generation this shiny new page without really talking to them and each other about the chapter before, the one that we lived through, the one that hurts, the one that we want to forget, but the one that might help change how they see the future rather than falling back on the myths of the past. We all pass down our opinions, our preconceptions, and our misconceptions, usually without first questioning them ourselves. Sometimes we need to talk to people who don't fold our own opinions back on us. The day I helped build the bonfire, I also sat down with Jackie McDonald. Jackie, of course, is a former UDA commander and now a community worker. We both know that the UDA killed my dad, but while we were sitting talking there, it wasn't the most important thing about our chat. The most important thing is that we both shared. We shared a bit of our past and our pain, our hopes and our fears for the future. And it felt good. With two boys under five now, I know the chairing isn't easy. Offering up something that you'd rather hang on to. It's way easier to knock seven bells out of each other and then cry when you're not getting your own way. A shared island means challenging ourselves to go beyond our own comfort zones and what we're prepared to give up to make things better for others and ourselves. In this year of centenaries, the ghosts of the past are easy to honour. It's way easier to sing a rebel song about a united Ireland than decide not to sing it in order to maybe have one. And yet we have to be honest with each other about who we are, how we feel, and why we feel it. And it's not just trauma that gets passed down. This isn't just a northern thing. Across this entire island, not talking and not engaging means that other things get passed down too. One-sided history, stereotypes, and maybe the worst of all, apathy. It's easy in a post-Brexit world to sit in Dublin and say the British government doesn't care about the North when the truth is, for many people here in the Republic, they aren't particularly interested in it either, unless a Northern team pulls a hard Brexit with Sam Maguire. I know it can be a tricky place to get your head around somewhere that's home to Orange men and All-Ireland winners, but it's way harder to understand when you're not curious. As someone born and reared in County Down, a place that in the past has returned both Eamon de Valera and Enoch Powell as our MPs, it's always been clear there's another side to the coin. Disagreeing or ignoring another opinion or another way of life doesn't make it go away. We've had to share things in Northern Ireland for a while now. For a long time we didn't, and it got us nowhere. Sometimes compromise is slow, frustrating, torturous. Sometimes it doesn't happen at all, but we are still sharing the same space. And the vast majority of people in the North no longer look at things through a binary prism. They're getting on with their lives and each other. Say this quietly, but the shared island we're talking about is already happening today, just up the road. Is it a love-in? No. Is it united? Definitely not. But you know, too often on this island, we get fixated with the notion of being united, remaining part of the United Kingdom, becoming part of a united Ireland. But as a fan of the red side of Manchester, these days, can I say that being united isn't all it's cracked up to be? This island is never going to be united. And that's okay. Because no matter if, and it's a big if a border poll takes place, and more importantly, no matter how it turns out, most people living here will feel exactly the same about who they are and what they believe in. There's still going to be a million or so on this island who are British. They don't just think they're British. They don't need converted. They're not confused. They're British. In the same way that a million or so living north of the border today know that they're Irish. A shared island means being able to be Irish in a future Northern Ireland or be British in a future Ireland and not holding no fear. It means we can all feel as at home the day after a border poll as the day before, no matter the result. In the 1960 All-Ireland football final when Down slayed the mighty Kerry, my old headmaster, Jarlath Carey, played midfield. He once told me that the last thing that was said in the dressing room before they ran out that day was, "Whatever happens, the mountains of Mourne will still be standing when you get home." Now, I'm not for a second saying that a border poll is anywhere near as important as Down winning in All-Ireland. But whatever the outcome, the mountains of Mourne will still be standing. And the nationalists and the unionists who live there will still be sharing those mountains, agreeing on the same things and disagreeing on the same things. I never thought that I'd be a paddy on top of an 11th of July bonfire. But after it was, I drove home to Dundrum, County Down, and would you believe, the mountains of Mourne were still standing. The flags were up on the lampposts in the main street for the 12th of July parade. And on the same main street, in Park Sean O'Keelta, they were putting the flags out for an under-10 GAA game. There weren't any GAA players walking arm in arm down the main street with orange men singing Kumbaya. No one was sailing into the sunset, but we were still sharing the island. Sharing sometimes isn't straightforward. A lot of it isn't easy. But if we all start with ourselves and we think about what we as individuals can share, it's maybe not as hard as you think.
So Patrick Kildee talking about sharing and reconciliation. I hope you found that interesting. I'm recording this several days before it's being broadcast, so events may have moved on by the time you hear this, but bear with me. This week I've been watching the unfolding of yet another collapse of the Stormont Assembly. It's actually managed to sit for the two of the last 5 years, and this time it's the Deputy Unionist Party have withdrawn from the First Minister position in the Assembly, which means that Sinn Féin's Deputy First Minister also loses her position, and it means that the Executive of Government collapses. The Assembly still has its MLAs, which is the local term for MPs, and so they're all still there, but they can't actually pass any new bills or budgets until after the election that's due in May. And in a piece of fairly cynical manipulation of the deadline rules and so on, the DUP doesn't mean that the election's brought forward. You know, they'll just sit tight until May. Everybody will still draw their pay. And so you could be cynical about that too. So there's still a lot of them-ins and us-ins at work there. And it looks like that after the election, on current opinion polls, Sinn Féin may well be the largest single party, which means they get the role of First Minister. And the DUP may well not be able to cope with that and will refuse to take part in devolved government. And that would lead to direct rule from London once again. Now, you compound all that with major shenanigans about Northern Ireland Protocol, which came about because of the DUP's political incompetence during Brexit. You've got Boris Johnson's Partygate problems and other senior Tories looking as though they're jockeying for position with them for the rest of the party, the Tory party, as Boris's replacement, and the possibility of a trade war with Europe, and it's like watching some sort of slow train wreck. And the DUP are doing this basically to highlight the idea that there's checks coming across the Irish Sea, and of course nobody wants to see us go back to a border on the island, because that takes you back towards the arguments for the trouble starting up again and all that sort of thing. And then the courts have got involved in it, whether the checks and goods that Edwin Poots has announced should be stopped or they shouldn't happen. And it's I despair at times looking at them all. I see one unionist commentator saying, "In the end, it's come to a pretty pass when Sinn Féin become the guardians of the rule of law, as determined by the Parliament of the United Kingdom, and the DU representatives choose disloyalty to the Queen in Parliament." And that's from, you know, the unionist side of things. So I'm certainly going to continue watching this space, as they say. And I think if you want to keep up with that stuff, a good place to keep track is ITV News have a website, and they have a UTV section for Ulster Television, and you get quite good coverage, I think, on there. And of course there's stuff on the RTE website. It's a good place to start. I also follow a blog site called Slugger O'Toole, and that has probably perspectives from the sort of from the unionist side, but there's good dialogue and good discussion. And in fact, I think if the people who were discussing things on there were the politicians and not the people who were actually doing the job had more say, then it would be a better thing. So maybe we see major changes at this election. We're certainly, it's going to be, for Northern Ireland anyway, it's going to be a continuing drama. As I say, watch this space. So we're coming towards the end of our time, and I'm going to play it with a piece of music. It's Horselips with a tune called The Silver Spear. Thanks to all our sponsors who made this all possible. I'd normally thank the technical staff who did all the work, but that was me, and all the funny noises and glitches you hear, including the builders who are outside the window where I'm recording, are all down to that's all down to me in this case. So hopefully you're all keeping well, and look forward to seeing you next time. Remember, you can listen to this both on Access Radio, but you can also get it on a podcast. If you look for our podcast site on Facebook, you'll find a link to it. And hopefully we'll see you next time.
Been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Thanks to the generosity of our sponsors, we couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, Hutt Valley Irish Society, and Butler's Chocolates. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.